Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my pillion riding partner, Dave Vitti. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good.
Good.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux, as the UK's largest specialist insurance broker. Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. So, we've got someone a bit special today, Dave, haven't we?
Haven't we just? I mean, do you know what? We were saying this actually the other day on one of the episodes that we were recording. We were talking about motorsport, and I told you that actually, far from F1 being my favourite, my two things are touring cars and bikes, right? So what a treat for me today to be sat talking to you and our special guest. Well, do you know what? You better introduce him now because he is a bit special.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Our special guest today is someone, like you said, Dave, is very special. And even though he'll never admit it himself, the word legend is much overused these days. But in this case, our guest today is more than justified and totally appropriate. In the world of superbikes, there are few that have won more honours or whose name is held in higher esteem. It is, of course, the one and only Mr. Carl Fogarty.
Hiya, Carl.
How's it going, guys? You all right?
Really good. Ace to speak to you, pal.
Thanks, mate. Been a while. How are you keeping?
Yeah, I'm really good, actually. How about you?
I'm all right, yeah. Actually, really good at the moment. I just had a week holiday in Aberystwyth, of all places. I arrived at time. Got down there with the missus and the dogs and the push bikes and the kayaks and the fishing rods. And yeah, a great week. So,
sweet.
All fresh and ready to go, mate.
Very good. And what's a normal week looking like for you at the moment, Carl? Because obviously last year must have been weird because nothing happened with COVID. But, you know, how do you amuse yourself now off the track?
Yeah, it was great. It was nothing to do last year. It was mint. I was loving it being at home. just the weather was great as well. I was just playing around on the dirt bikes in the field and do a bit of mountain biking and whatever. I enjoyed, I know it sounds a bit selfish, but I actually enjoyed the year off and stuff. Not do anything really, you know. And obviously the diary is starting to fill up a little bit for this year now. I think probably first event for me, maybe first one, I might even see you there actually, Jason. It's a Goodwood Festival of Speed.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the kind of the first thing really penciled my diary, I think, in the beginning of July. So, yeah. But it's been good, really. I've been, it's all sorts of stuff, really. But mainly, you know, this, I was saying that you're busy doing nothing. It could be more true that, because I'm always doing something, but not really doing anything, if you know what I mean. I'm not really working, but I'm always doing something all the time, you know.
It's 20 years then since you retired, isn't it? I mean, can you believe it's 20 years? And does part of you still miss it?
You know what? It does. It feels like it's more than 20 years, to be honest.
Does it?
It seems like a different. Yeah, it must admit it does. It seems like a completely different lifetime ago, which, well, I guess 20 years it is really, but do I miss it? No, I don't. I, there were a lot of years I did when it initially ended in Australia, like I say, 20 years ago. The next couple of years, I kind of missed it really. I did. I found it difficult, but not now, no. I just think now, I think the thought of getting on one of those bikes now, my body just says no. You know, if I get on and do like 3 or 4 laps around Donington Park or something like that, I mean, agony with all the old injuries that have come back to me, a bit of sick, especially my knees and that. So just the position you're in on them things anyway, it's not a comfortable position. So
No, I
don't miss it, I guess. And then probably the reasons why is because I can't get on one of the bikes now anyway and be comfortable. I can wobble up the driveway at Goodwood and be all right, but that's about it really, mate, to be honest.
Because, I mean, I can remember, you know, just watching with my jaw open what you're up to. And in fact, the first ever bike I bought was a 916.
All right, cool.
And, you know, at the time, that was just mind-numbingly quick. But since then, they're just crazy now, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, but thankfully, in some ways, it's a positive and a good thing. Well, because I'm old school, it's a bit, I don't like it. But the electronics and technology of the bikes now keeps them, kind of keeps them under control a bit, you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
Well, the guys obviously still riding very, very fast bikes. They're up to like, I don't even know, like 220 horsepower, maybe more than that, I guess. And mine was like 160, 170 or so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, all the electronics on the bikes and the technology of the bikes is just unbelievable, to be fair. You know, I mean, I watch a MotoGP first few rounds this year, and none of the guys, you'll see them ever eyesight a bike anymore. It was back in my day. You could control the rear, really, the rear tire, and a lot loss of grip all with your throttle, you know, down to you, really. But now it's kind of all controlled by the bike, really. But they've got that much horsepower, I guess it needs to, really. I'd love it if they took all the electrics off the bikes. It's like, all right, guys, we're taking all the electrics off this weekend. Away you go. Yeah. There'd be carnage. I think I said the other day to an interview, I said, you'll probably see Rossi back up front again then, really.
Yeah.
And the others firing themselves off left, right, and centre because they'd be he wouldn't be all right without the electronics on was obviously from his era where he started out. He wouldn't have had any electronics anyway. So yeah, it's a lot. It's changed a lot now. The technology's changed. We've gone very similar to like the Formula One guys, really. You know, it's kind of caught up with those guys in some ways. You know, with the technology, really.
Yeah.
Carl, having raced all around the world, is the TT just a completely different thing, as in terms of the intensity and the skill and the danger when you're a top rider? Or is it just another circuit?
I think for me, it was just another circuit for me, I suppose, in some ways. That was just something, again, we've been from generation I was, and maybe just that end of the generations that kind of went there and then went on to world championship, winning world titles and world championship races on short circuits. I was the last one to do that. It hasn't been done since me. It probably won't be done ever again. But to me, it was just a race I really wanted to win. I brought up with it. You know, as a kid, all my childhood memories were really at the TT and following me dad who raced there for many years. So it was like a family holiday. We got a week off school. It was great, you know, going to the TT and all that kind of stuff, following my dad. So I wanted to win that, you know, very much. I wanted to be the fastest guy around there. I remember being that in my head for a lot of years. And
well, you had a record for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I won the big races in 1990 and then took the outright lap record in 92.
Yeah.
The year I won my first World Superbike race. So it's funny because I hadn't realised until somebody points out only a couple of years ago that all the years you were world champion on the short circuits and winning all the races, you were still the fastest guy around the Alman TT circuit. You held that record for like 7 years until 1999. So, yeah, it's probably one of those things I'm most proud of. If I look back on my career and think, you know, it's something that'll never happen again. You'll never have the fastest guy going out of the TT circuit at the same time winning World Superbike races. It's just never going to happen. So to be able to do both, which last of a dying breed, which they all used to, I guess, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's good. It's good to have that, I guess. Really.
It's some race, that mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have you been, Jace?
Yeah, I've been, yeah. And if I'm really honest, it frightened me a bit.
Yeah.
It's worth watching, to be honest.
it really did take the wind out of me. I just could not believe what I was witnessing. It probably took me an hour to just get my head around it all. It's just mind-numbingly quick, isn't it?
We used to go as kids because my mum's from the Isle of Man. So we've got family over there. And my uncle still lives, Carl, at the bottom of Bray Hill, just on the left-hand side before Quarterbridge.
He might have seen my dad crash at the bottom of Bray Hill then.
He probably has done. And it's funny, actually, what they do, this is my Uncle Malcolm and my Auntie Lynn, and every year what pays for their holiday away is that they do what a lot of people do and just open up their house as a B&B for the week or 10 days.
Yeah.
Granted, they've got a four-bedroom house, so it's not small, but they'll have kind of 16 Dutch bikers and stuff staying with them, literally sleeping on the kitchen floor. And on the bathroom floor.
But it smells great in there.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what they do, and that's what a lot of people do just to kind of supplement their income.
It's something else.
Well, I went back. I was always wanting to go there as a spectator. For years, I kept saying, right, one year I'm going to go rent a house and take all the lads, go with the mates and take the lads over to. And I did that in 2015. It's one of the best week's holidays I've ever had in my life. The weather was great, and we had this house on the side of the track, obviously, in a really good spot where you could see the guys coming towards you. Just outside of Ramsey, it was. It was a place called Milltown, just near there. You could see the guys coming into view over a bit of a leap. They ran really, really fast, right hand bend, then head away down to a corner called Schoolhouse Corner and away. But I'd just have a week there with the lads and the barbecue going, the sunshine, a few beers. And I had like a rotation of mates coming in every like two or three days. And I can't really drink very much, to be honest. I'm not very good at drinking. But so every time that there's a new fresh set of lads are coming, I was like, go on, get the beers out. And I'm thinking, by the end of the week, I was totally, I could hardly speak to them. I was a right mess. So like, the last 2 days, the biggest drinkers of all turned up, like, oh no, not again. Like, I'm going to have to like take them out, entertain them, and go up to the grandstand and do the VIP bit. And all. And, it was a great, great week. And it was something I wanted to do. And, you know, it was just I look back on that now. It's one of the best sort of weeks I've ever had, really. I wasn't even racing, you know, just watching.
You won the Northwest 200 a couple of times, didn't you, as well?
Yeah, the Northwest, that was always a race I wanted to win as well. I kept having a lot of bad luck there over the years. And I was qualifying fastest and whatnot. And funny enough, all the years I was on the RC30, which is probably the most reliable bike in the world, I had nothing but trouble with it when I got to the Northwest 200, really. But I went back on the Ducati in 93, which was probably as fast as anything. Well, probably the fastest bike I've had that year. It was the best bike I've had, really. It was more of a match for the Nortons, which I'd struggled against the previous years over the Honda. And finally won it, So that was get a monkey off your back, as you say, with that one. I really wanted to win Northwest. And again, both races, lap record and stuff like that. And that's where the story with the lucky green vest came from, where I kind of went there again, and I was a bit negative, thinking, oh, yeah, I'll probably break down again like I always do it, you know. And one of the Irish guys said, you need a bit of Irish luck, you boy. You need to wear something green tomorrow. You'll be right. So I wore only a good find. My wife at the time was pregnant, and she had a green Benetton vest top sort of thing, you know. So I wore that under my leathers and won both races in lap record. So I was that superstitious that I wore it, and I just signed for Ducati as well in 93. My season hadn't started off too well, and I went to the next round in Spain and won both races, and it just kicked on for us. So the green vest, I wore it for every single race from 1993 right to when it was...
Is that right?
The race in Phillip Island in 2000, I was knocked out, I had no idea what had gone in the crash, and the vest was cut from me, you know, while I was in a bit of a heap, and we had it all stitched back together again. And
I was going to say, have you still got it?
Yeah, still got it, yeah, it's framed on the wall now.
I thought for 1 minute, you got one of Michaela's green braziers, and you popped that on.
No, that wouldn't have been good, would it, really? If I'd have fallen off as well, and next thing, they're taking my leathers off in hospital and think, what the hell's he got on here? Like, you know, I'll take some explaining.
Do you remember, like, your mum kind of saying that you needed to wear decent underwear in case you got hit by a bus?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
That's right, yeah.
Make sure you've got a good bra on in case they have to peel you off the tyre wall.
Mate, in about 2006, someone kind of put a bet down with me and said, "You go on, wear a bra during a race." Anyway, I did it at Brands Hatch. funny enough, it did reveal itself on the podium.
Fantastic.
So, mate, is it true that you didn't pass your bike test until you were 28?
That's true, though, yeah.
At which point you'd already won three world titles. Is that right?
Yeah. It was funny that, because I kept getting asked to do stuff. I can't remember. It might have been someone like the mayor of Newcastle or something, Leeds, someone like that wanted me to do a ride out with him. I can't remember what it was now. It was in 1993. I was leading, Dicey for the lead of the first. I didn't win the World Championship that year, but I came second. But at the time, I might have been leading the championship, actually. Anyway, I was Dicey for the lead in the World Championship in 1993. And I said, well, I haven't got a road license, I can't do it. And it became a bit of a thing. And I said, look, this is ridiculous. You're a factory Ducati rider. And I think Ducati UK, whatever it was. I said, look, you're going to have to sort this out, really. So, yeah, I'd have the lessons and all that kind of stuff in a few weeks in the summer. It was so hard to, like, have to be told how to ride a bike in the correct way to pass your test. You know, like, cover your back brake and do this and keep looking behind and using mirrors. I'm like, oh, God's sake, you know, I think I've got a slap on the hand for using two fingers for braking. I'm thinking, I was racing Ockenheim last week.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine the instructor, though? You know, how was your day at work, darling? Yeah. Like, I was giving Carl Fogarty a bike lesson.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy. Anyway, I went for the test. I passed anyway. And there was a few press turned up, and I just thought they were dying for me to fail, weren't they? You know what I mean? But I managed to get it passed. But, yeah, it's true that I didn't pass the test all night. Sort of 28 years old, yeah, crazy. Yeah.
And did you have a car license then? I mean, did you pass your car license at a sort of, you know, normal age, 17, 18?
Yeah, straight away, yeah, 17, I passed my test in the car, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had a moped on the road, like sort of most kids, were into bikes at 16, 17. As soon as I got 17, I mean, them cold mornings, pissing down with rain, when you're going to work, I just thought, you know what? You just get me off this moped and the bike sort of thing. I want to get in a car. Get the radio. I want to get the heater on, you know, in the winter months as well. So, yeah, straight away up to the car. And I think I was just a bit too stupid, too crazy, a bit too fast to be on a bike on the road. And most of the guys who race, really, throughout the years, didn't really ride bikes on the road much at all, really. It's a different thing, riding bikes on the road compared to, obviously, race on the track. So, you probably know that, Jace, anyway, with a car job. But no, I didn't. Not a big fan of riding bikes on the road back then, really. I kind of enjoy it now more than full enough than I ever did when I was younger riding bikes on the road. Yeah, I enjoy it now in the summer, getting out when some good weather comes.
I must admit, I scared myself on mine and had to get rid of it.
Yeah, it's other people that scare you, isn't it, really?
You know, I'm not that natural on a bike. I can't feel where the front end is. And I thought, you know what? It's too quick. So, yeah, it had to go. Well, I lived in the kitchen, actually, on a stand. Because it was so gorgeous. Hey, so cars, what was your first car?
First car was a Vauxhall Cavalier.
Oh, nice.
That pile of it was. But my dad was at a couple of warehouses storing stuff. He's storing stuff for Thwaites, is the brewery. Big, sort of famous brewery in Lancashire. Sorry, Blackburn in Lancashire as well. But And then I think they had some old cars that they were getting rid of, some company cars. I think they must have had about 10 Vauxhall Cavaliers, white ones as well. And I got one of them. I think it was 800 quid it was. Was it 800 quid mm-hmm. or 400 quid? I can't remember what it was, but yeah, it wasn't great, but it's a lot better than riding the bike to work in the middle of the winter anyway, put it that way. It
might sound like a silly question, I suppose, because obviously the world of bikes that you inherited through your dad and growing up with yeah. those as a kid, but were you into cars as well?
Probably not, no. I never really have massively been into cars. As he says, I'm staring out the window of his new R8, but no, I've not really been into cars, really. Seems a bit stupid to say, no, I'm not really into cars, but I guess I am in a way, but not, no, my mates know more about cars and models and whatever. Ferraris come out and what model. I'm crap with all that, you know, numbers and stuff like that, you know. But yeah, I've got a nice car, but I don't generally bother that much really with car job. It's like with the Formula One, I kind of want to know who's won, but I don't really watch it, if I'm honest. I never watch it at all, but I always want to know how Lewis has got on it, what the results are, and that's it really. I don't bother watching it.
Do you think that's because no car can ever come close to the thrill and the adrenaline rush that a bike will give you? Is that what it is, do you think?
I don't think it's that, no. I think it's just, I don't know what it is, really. It's funny, the car guys, from my experience, when I've met the F1 guys and other guys, they're more into the bikes than they are the cars, to be honest. Yeah. And then the other way around, the bike guys are kind of more into cars, really. It's fascinating that's the truth, but that's it, really. But no, I don't know what it is, really. I've just brought up around bikes all my life. Like I said, my dad used to race. So for me, it was just bikes. And I got a lot of offers and opportunities to try cars, but I just wasn't interested at all. I remember in 2000 when I retired in September, I think it was an Alfa Romeo team, a touring car team. Just eventually persuaded me to test at Donington. And I'm going round and round and round. I'm thinking, oh, I'm bored of this thing. Right? And they're like, your times are good. Your times are quite good. I'm thinking, was the radio on? Switch the radio on or something as I'm going around. I was like, bored. Sorry, Jace.
It's great to hear it.
And I just thought, I said, guys, I come in. I said, oh, thanks a lot. It's really appreciated. I said, it's not for me. I'm not interested. I'm trying to figure out now to win at somebody else's sport after putting so much into winning. Figuring out to win at bikes. I just want to enjoy it. I just felt bored doing it, really. And I didn't know. That was the one sort of test that I did for Alfa Romeo. And it didn't end well, really. I said, no, I'll leave it to boys like Jason to do that, you know.
Well, it's interesting that, because actually driving them, they're not that exciting compared to bikes. No. But it's the racing which is the juicy bit.
I think a few people said, look, because I'm not that well into cars, and they said, look, you've done the wrong thing. If you'd have gone in something else, some rear-wheel drive or something, you'd have been different thing altogether. But he said, touring cars, no, it's not for you. But I could have told you that before you did it, but there'd be other, I mean, single-seater or something like that, you'd have enjoyed it a lot more, I think. But anyways, no, I'm not interested. To be honest, mate, so.
At the risk of asking potentially a silly question,
go on.
At somewhere like Donington, are the lines the same for cars and bikes? This is sort of to both of you. I mean, is the racing line different or not?
Well, for me, they were the same, but I didn't know where I was going, so I just took the bike racing line on in the Alfa Romeo. It seemed all right, but actually, I did spin off at Crane of Kerr's after a few laps.
Did you? Good lap.
Yeah, I did.
Good place to go off.
It was a bit damp, and I thought, it's flat out now, right the way through. Obviously, as you're going right, you flick it to the left, don't you? Yeah. And I flicked it to the left and just kept it flat, the car. There was a lot of damp packed around. It just went.
It just beat you.
And it just went, that horrible silentness where it just started sliding. I thought, it's going to grip and now just go over and over and over. It didn't grip. And I'm like, I was shaking. The thing just slid on the grass and just stopped in the kitty litter, you know. But it didn't. It just kind of lifted up a little bit and dropped back down. God, I nearly went over then. They felt they'd gone over.
Got away with it.
Yeah, I got away with it. So maybe that's what put me off, really. I thought, that's why I probably come in and went, no, guys, it's not for me, this. I'm all right, I've had enough. Just scared myself to death, you know.
I tell you, I once did a thing at Thruxton with Nama Kenzie for Clarkson, and I was in a 911, and he was on a Yamaha R1, and we were basically trying to see which was quickest around a lap. And it was really interesting following him and the lines he took. And one thing I didn't understand at the time, but and then I asked him was, you know, out the back of Thruxton, there's like long and these corners go on forever.
Yeah.
Well, he was changing the angle of the lean on the bike because it alters the gear ratio, doesn't it? Because of the rolling radius of the rear tyre. Is that right, Carl?
Is that what he told you? He must have just because we were going slower.
Oh, man, that was like 25 years ago and I bought that.
How many times have you told that story?
Oh, about 35,000 times.
I'm guessing you guys, just from my little bit of, you know, what little bit I did do, I think you guys, I think we turn in a bit earlier. Than what
earlier,
you stay out a bit wider, we turn in a bit earlier, I think. That's what one thing I did remember, I did notice, I think, at the time.
Yeah, because that's where our lap time comes from, is on the brakes compared to a bike, really.
We got
fork boots to stop it with.
Yeah.
Out of all the cars you've had, and I guess you've had a few, have you had like a personal fave?
I'll tell you what I liked, you know. I nearly said the R8 because I think it's a fantastic car to drive. It's like driving an everyday car, and it's a supercar, and it's just so easy and so nice to drive. But if I think back to what I've had, I think what I really enjoyed at the time, and remember, I smile thinking about it now, and that was that I was on my road for Honda. I got the Honda NSX.
Yes.
I got to give one of them things. I wish I'd kind of kept that, and you know, they're worth quite a bit of money now, I reckon they are, to be honest. But that was, for the time, it was like mid-90s. That was an awesome piece of kit, that was brilliant. Yeah, I loved that one, yeah, definitely.
And bikes, I mean, I suppose it's very difficult to have a favourite bike, bearing in mind it's what you do, but...
Yeah, well, Ducati 916 straight away. Yeah. I mean, it's the bike I want everything on. It's the most iconic-looking bike probably ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the bike I'd choose above any bike, to be honest, for sure, definitely, yeah.
So how many bikes have you got at the minute, Carl?
I've got I haven't got much, to be honest. I'm looking around now, there's nothing even, it's sat in the kitchen like there's going to be a bike behind me or something. I've actually got the Ducati Panigale, I've got 001, number one of 500, actually. I actually don't want it. Do you want to buy it? Does anyone wants to buy it? I don't really want it. So I've got that, which is for sale. I've got all sorts of bits, just old stuff. I've mainly got off-road stuff, to be honest, mate. I like my off-road stuff, Bill. Yeah, I've just got a brand new Gas to 250. Gone back to a two-stroke, which is a great bike to ride. Absolutely love it. So, I've just got bits of bikes, old scooter from my last pallet scooter. I just got that back into my home for the first time in like 15 years. I had my last ever pallet scooter that I used, obviously, when I was racing to get around the pallet, you know. So... I left it out in Spain and I had a house out there and sold it. And then I left it at my next door neighbor's house and kind of forgot all about it, to be fair, if I'm honest. And then remembered about it a few years ago and I finally got it back last year. So it's still, I've got the logbook. Logbook was actually under the seat. You put the key in the seat. It was there, the logbook, everything. So I've just got that restored again. It's only done about 160 miles or something, so I've just got that bike. I got my first ever little bike I got for a 10th birthday, or it was 9th birthday back in the day.
What was that?
Well, it's a weird looking thing, actually. I can't, people say, what was that? It's a Honda engine in what I can only call like a homemade chassis, a homemade bike, like a monkey bike thing. It came actually from the Honda dealer at the time in my hometown Blackman, called Ken Martin Motorcycles Honda, and he made it for his son. Chris Martin, who actually raced Chris Martin. Well, not a bad rider, to be fair. He raced in the mid-80s. He got signed for Skull Bandit Suzuki and rode alongside Paul Lydon, actually, for a year. Did okay, you know. So it was built for him. It was called a Moto Chris. It was called Chris Martin. So I've still got that bike, actually.
Excellent.
So he outgrew it. My dad bought it for, I can't remember, it was 100 quid or something, I don't know, back in mid-70s, 1975. And I've got it back and it all restored in the last few years. So that's kind of means a lot to me. To my first bike back, you know. But it's a weird looking thing. You see, you think, what the hell's that? It just looks really, really odd. If you scroll through my Instagram page or something, it's on there somewhere.
Yeah.
I put it on about a year or two ago. So I don't know.
I guess that's where it all began then, when you look at that.
It is,
you
know,
You it's look exactly down at that and you sort of go, actually, I can almost trace, you know, everything I've done in my life back to that bike.
Yeah, it's an engine that a lot of people's career would have started on, to be honest. A Honda C50 engine, which still exists today, you know, it really does. It's a just no clutch, semi-automatic, thought it was three-speed thing, you know. They're still around, a bulletproof engine, and the plastic chickens and all sorts. It's been around forever. It's still around now. Is that a little Honda engine, C50, yeah, so... A lot of people's careers would have started on them, I reckon, in my day.
Absolutely. Switching subject, we have to ask you about I'm a Celebrity, because of course you won it. You were king of the jungle, you know, from being a champion on the track, you were then king of the jungle.
King of the jungle.
Explain if you can what that 3 weeks was like.
It's the coolest title I've ever been given, that king of the jungle. It's mint. What was it like? Oh God, it's just a what do you start with that one? A roller coaster ride of emotions from day one. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's the biggest TV show in the UK, obviously. I mean, what goes into producing that show and making it happen? Yeah. You kind of, you got a feel for it all and saw it all. Like, apparently 700 people it takes to put that show on TV.
Really?
Is it big as that, really?
When it was in Australia, it's a huge thing. When, obviously, it's live every night as well. It's no, but it was just, I got asked to do it about 15, 16 years, just after I retired, really, about two or 3 years after I retired. And obviously, I didn't do it then. I'm not really sure why. I probably wasn't in the right kind of place to do it then. Probably would have, if I'd have done it then, probably would have seen a lot of different me. I probably wouldn't have won it. So when they came back, ITV, when it, 5, 6, 7 years ago, God, how time flies, it's, well, I can't remember, it was 2014, so six, 7 years ago. I said, will you do it? I, even then, I'm like, it took me a lot of persuading from them for me to do it. My wife didn't want me to do it. The kids are going to do it. And I'm like, I'm not sure about this. I don't know. And I hate being, I don't really like people. I don't like being hungry. I hate being bored. I don't do the celeb thing. Well, this is not good. And it's gone, gone. I thought, the challenge for me was those things. Can I cope with other people, celebrity sort of thing? Can I cope without food? Can I cope with the boredom? It was kind of challenging myself. I thought, oh, come on, let's do it. Let's do it. You know, and God, I didn't expect to. To happen what happened, you know. I just thought, I'll be the first one to get voted out, you know what I mean? But to go all the way and that, like I said, the biggest show on TV and end up winning it just for being the ordinary dickhead from Blackburn.
And how old were the kids then when you were
now? No, they're still, I say kids, I always call them kids, but they're still both in the 20. Yeah, well, Claudia would have been 20 and Danielle 23, I think, at the time.
And did they give you loads of stick?
No, they really wanted to. They, I mean, obviously, they got, I mean, even ITV said, look, we'll pay for the kids to come outside to Australia as well. So, you know, they really, I don't know why they went out of the way so much to get me on the show. Maybe they thought they were going to get the California to use to race bikes. They were like, hated everybody. It was obnoxious, ignorant, and just self-belief and all those things that kind of made me famous, I suppose, but that winning mentality. I think they thought they were going to get that character again. I'm not like that. I'm just an ordinary lad, from, like I say, from Blackburn, who just has a laugh and gets, you know, doesn't like take life too seriously anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get, but I love to do stuff.
I was going to say, and also people don't understand that actually that, you know, that bloke comes out when the helmet goes on and the leathers go on and you get on the bike and when you're off it, you're a different bloke, aren't you? Same as me.
Yeah, I was. I mean, just away from the racetrack, I was quite a bit of a shy sort of person, really, but you got me the racetrack and, you know, and I'd just say all sorts of stuff and I don't even know if I meant it. I don't even know why I said it. I just put pressure on myself all the time, more and more pressure on myself. But I kept my mouth shut. I put a lot of pressure on myself. It would have been a lot easier, but I kept saying, I look back and I think, why do you say that and say this? And you know what I mean? And then I'd go out and still win. I'd whatever I said, you know, I'm this, I'm not the best, he's crap, he's not, his bike's better than him. And it all seemed to come true, but I didn't need to do that, really. I look back, I've got a bit older and wiser, and I think, why don't you just keep your bloody mouth shut and just get on with it, mate? It would have been a lot easier for yourself, to be honest.
But you wouldn't have been the man that you were, would you?
No,
you know, that's
right.
It. And I suppose it's all part of it. It's the character, it's the edge, it's the mentality, it's the focus, it's all of those things. And I say, without them, you wouldn't have been the rider that you were.
No, you're right, mate. You're right, exactly. So, yeah, I don't regret it at all. I'm joking. But, I've just, when you look back, I mean, obviously you get reminded of it a lot more these days, like with the social media stuff and YouTube, that kind of stuff. You think, oh, God, look at what someone's put on now. I'm like, did I really say that, you know? But people loved it. And, you know, as much as, you know, they hated it in some ways, they look back around, they miss it. Oh, the characters aren't there anymore. And we miss you. And, you know, it was great. You were last of a dying breed that they could win on road circuits, as we discussed before, and then win on short circuits, that kind of thing. So it's changed a lot. It's not just in my sport, but in every sport, really. And not for the better, in my opinion, in a lot of ways.
So, Carl, music, cars, right? You know, off on a journey. If you had a fantasy drive, so you're going from A to B. In what car? Where would it be? And what would you be listening to?
Or on a bike? Actually, we'll give you that. You could be a ride in your case.
Oh, music's got to be Oasis, obviously. I think I have to be in a car. I'd have to be in a Ferrari as well. I've never had a Ferrari. It's always been like that's the ultimate car, in my opinion. So, and it would be probably Europe, around sort of Monte Carlo, Italy, that kind of coast, what we call it, around that area. I suppose that would be the one. Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Can't go wrong with that. Yeah. Oasis in a Ferrari on the Italian Riviera.
Yeah. Or Oasis in the Ferrari in the Alaman TT circuit may be quite good as well. It might not end well.
Let's get the Riviera booked and a couple of Ferraris and we'll have a giggle.
All right, mate. Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like a plan. Let's do it.
On that note, Jason, I think we need to wrap it up, mate.
Well, mate, we could be speaking here all day, but unfortunately, that is it for this episode of Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save some money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Thanks, Dave, as always, and a huge thanks to the legend, that is Mr. Carl Fogarty. Thanks so much, Carl.
Cheers, guys.
Great having you on.
Pleasure, cheers. Thanks a lot.
Pleasure, no, it's been great. It's been a pleasure chatting to you. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Ta-ra.